Good morning. My name is Julie Fedorchek. I'm with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered in the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session on the NSP natural gas rate increase request, case number PU-21-381. It's 10:30 on June 16th. I don't have any opening comments. I'll get into these matters, but first want to see if my colleagues have any opening comments.
I do not have any opening comments.
Sherry? Nor do I.
Okay, so we have Sherry Haugen-Huffert and Randy Christman here at the work session, as well as Jack Hsu, who is representing the commission as general counsel, and Rob Frank, who is also advocacy on this case for, I mean advisory on this case for the commission. So I thought, I know everybody was like, why are we getting together so quickly? I really just wanted to take a minute to get together, and we don't have to talk for long if we don't have a lot to say, but just to, we can go over, and I'll ask staff in a minute to go over the late filed exhibits and go over those, and then to just sort of maybe talk a little bit about how we'd like to proceed on settlement, the non-settled items, et cetera, and we don't have to make any decisions today, but I just wanted to maybe take everybody's temperature a little bit on the case. So for starters, Jack and Rob, could you guys walk through the late filed exhibits?
Never mind. There were a couple late filed exhibits. If you remember, we asked for the ARP approved revenue apportionment and also their rate design request, and they did make a filing on that. I think that was late filed exhibit number 39. Another item the commissioners requested was the, earnings, I believe, over the last few years, and I had not looked over that extensively prior to this work session, but they did make a filing on that because that was requested by the commission early on in the proceeding. And aside from that, they also provided a post-hearing position statement as well, which I know that wasn't requested, but ARP did provide that as well.
Can we walk through the exhibits?
Sure, we could do that.
I think that would be helpful.
Do you have them available?
I can. No, I didn't bring them.
Well, why don't I go print them out real quick, okay. And I'll come back in.
Just of what they're requesting,
or is that just some other?
Oh yeah, I don't have that. That would be great, Sherry. Thank you. I mean, I don't have it printed. Huh. I just caught up on my email.
While he's doing that, I'm going to grab something from my desk.
Anyone that's listening online, we're just getting a couple copies made of materials that everybody didn't have in hand. Thank you. Oh, thank you. This whole thing. Two pages, right? Top two pages.
Yeah. Is this my copy?
I don't know whose this is. It's two, the same thing. Two copies. I already have one, so.
So that's yours, right?
So I got two copies of one, but none of the other.
What do you need?
Is this what you're missing?
I don't know what you all got, but I just...
Well, this came in the mail. This, we all got it, but maybe just it's in your inbox still.
Oh.
Perhaps. Because I had
probably.
This in my inbox. Do you have this memo? That
Rob's, yes.
Yeah, that's what she got.
And not to make things complicated, but Randy didn't get this.
Do you have two windows?
Okay. I already have that too. Those are extras. That's the one that he's missing. Okay. There you go.
I got one.
And I got one.
Bring all this wrong stuff. Not this right stuff.
Awesome, thank you. Okay. We have
that.
Oh,
I have that. Sorry, thanks.
Okay. All right. right, I think everybody has now in hand Rob's memo, NSP's late filed exhibit on the historical actual return on equity from 2004 to 2021, the AARP proposed revenue apportionment and rate design, that was a late filed exhibit, and then the AARP's post-hearing statement of position. So we were going to go through, now that I've had it, okay, I think that there's really two big issues here. One is the there's a whole issue of rates and the rate design, and into that goes the class, cost of service study, et cetera, and that's the part that is not settled. And then there's the issue of the settlement, which includes the revenue requirement and the ROE, established ROE. Those would be the two big buckets in that, and all the other revenue requirement elements. Correct?
Madam Chair, that sounds correct. As you stated, there is the main settlement for the revenue requirement, and the subsequent settlement between the advocacy staff and company really delves into the rate design aspect as well as the class cost of service study, and that was the those are the two items that were heavily contended by, contended by AARP during the proceeding.
So I think just to keep it so we have a pathway moving forward, if we could focus first our discussion today on the settlement that was not objected to by AARP regarding the revenue requirement and those elements. We talked some during that discussion on the ROE and that level of ROE. From my standpoint, I had hoped that the ROE would be less, and I do think it's, you know, every percentage point or every point is pretty substantial as it relates to revenues. But I also recognize and am leaning towards being comfortable with it because of the volatility of interest rates right now and the change in the economy just since this rate case was filed until now. So, but that's where I'm at in regards to those issues. I didn't see a lot of other areas for reductions in the revenue requirement elements. The one area that I explored in questioning was the Fargo main project and whether, you know, it all should be counted or now, or whether some of it, you know, was built too big for future, if some of it wasn't used and useful. But I think the company kind of responded effectively to that, and so I don't really see that as an area for any revenue requirement reductions. So I'm reasonably comfortable with those pieces of the settlement, the revenue requirements sides. That's where I'm at. But I wanted to talk today to see if Randy or Sherry, if you guys had different ideas on that and want to dig into those things more, or where you're at on the non-contested settlement components, or if you need more time to think about it.
I don't think for me more time is really going to change my thoughts on it a lot, or probably any. And I think we're in a very similar state of mind on it. When the case was filed, and even after when the settlement occurred, I thought too with the ROE it was too much. I continue to feel like in these cases, I'll stick to this case, I guess. They're relying too much on equity that's driving up their costs. change in the very near future, where the cost of capital in the markets is going to be, has already shifted up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And even just not only since the case was filed, but since the settlement was reached. And so, but after hearing some of the explanation for why the amount is raised from equity, as is the case here, that partially comforted me. I still think it seems a little bit high, but overall, the settled part of the case, there are some very good things in there too that I thought were very, very good conclusions to issues that were under discussion. And so I would be supportive of the settled part.
Okay. How about you, Sherry?
Yeah, I concur with you guys. You know, when they, where they started and to where they came from, reached an agreement on the rate of return. We're just in some difficult times right now. And with the Feds doing the biggest rate increase ever right now. Mm-hmm. So I have no problem with the settlement agreement.
Okay, so we can kind of set that aside. That piece is good. It's good to know where we're all at on that. Then moving into the rate design components. There's a couple issues, couple big issues there, and Rob and Jack, I don't know how you can guide us in that regard. But the big issues for me are, and I think just in general, are the class cost of service study. You know, how true we want to stay to the results of NSB's class cost of service study. And then the treatment of the distribution mains. And maybe that's part of the class. No, that's not part of the class. It is part of the class cost of service study. So, what are your thoughts?
I think maybe I'll just tee it up and I'll hand it over to Rob, since I know he wrote a memo on this. So when you're going through the class cost of service study, there are a few different steps. There's a functionalization, there's a classification, and there's a subsequent allocation. Mm-hmm. Two issues that were kind of presented in this case were the larger issues in the class cost of service study was the class allocation of largely those distribution mains. There was some not in the final settlement that was filed by at least advocacy staff, but in Mr. Pavlovic's testimony, had some opposition to the minimum system cost design that the commission has been using for a while. And it's actually it's used quite a bit across the utility world, at least in gas service. Then subsequently, there's the allocation method, which was they had different design days that were used. One is a little more averaged. That's the one that SP uses. And Carl used the peak demand. Peak demand design day? Yeah. Subsequently for his allocation to the various classes. And there's that final issue then of how ultimately once that is allocated to the classes, they're going to recover those through the rate design, which of course has been proposed as a straight fixed variable rate that we're all fairly familiar with from the last few years worth of proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rob, I don't know if you want to provide some discussion on that.
Yeah, I think just from my standpoint with just delving into this without having a lot of background on it, I think the results from an embedded cost classification method would distribute some of the mains to residential, and that's just an argument between doing two different methods there and whatnot. It's a precedent for doing embedded cost. NSP came down from the original allocation by more than a half in the residential portion as far as what's being allocated there to try to mitigate the shock there. So there's an argument for that. I mean, it could be a little bit over allocated, and I think that's what, just looking at AARP, they're proposing to do just a straight, everybody gets the same percentage increase. And so I guess I'd have to have time to think about the rationale for doing that, and it might not actually, whether or not, I guess the question is whether or not that's fair or not to do it
right.
That way, and who's subsidizing who is the main question here. But as far as embedded cost, it has a precedence, and there was a mitigation factor that was going on in there. So, and the design day, again, that's something that it doesn't have demand-related or customer-related component. And so I guess an argument could be made there from NSP side that is not allocating that portion of the mains to the residential like it should. Just from the mere fact of using that you have costs associated with your trenching, you'd have to have a main line to support new customer growth
Sure.
versus not, if that makes sense. So it's my limited understanding, but...
of the two approaches. Those two approaches. How long has the current allocation methodology been used?
The class cost surface study, the straight fixed variable rate.
No, the class cost is, this class cost is service methodology.
My recollection is consistent with what we've done in the past for decades.
And it's not, is that something that
as far
you
as
would
it,
switch just like?
NSP did it prior on their last one, is that correct?
I believe that's correct. And there have been minor tweaks, but largely the same methodology. And the tweaks are, again, in recollection of the record, it's largely due to, I guess, changes in information that's available rather than major changes to the overall methodology.
And just so that we all understand the kind of precedence in this particular area, is it something that you can jump between, like, oh, now we want to do it this way, and next time we want to do it a different way, and you, like, make these significant jumps back and forth on how you consider allocating these costs, or is it something that you have to have a lot of a big strong record to warrant changing?
Well, the thing with the class cost of service study is these are all theoretical methodologies, so conceptually you could jump from one directly to another. I think some of the concern, at least in the past, and usually as utility boards and commissions are evaluating what to do, is how that ultimately impacts the customers. If you want to change it, a lot of times they'll try to take incremental steps to move it in the direction. So, for example, the demand allocator method is ultimately changed. It could have a huge swing towards the residential class or away from the residential class that could have a notable rate shock or, public outcry from the lack of gradualism in the change. And so, yes, is the answer. We could change, ultimately, how the class cost service studies are done in this rate case. However, I think you would likely see that there would be some, it would be notable. The change would be notable, the ultimate impact. So normally what we had been doing in the past as a body is taking incremental steps if we did want to make a change.
And that's where, as I see it, people talk about rate design being an art, not necessarily a fast science, where you have, like, the science part comes from these methodologies. Then you look at them, and you think, well, it might not be 100% this way or 100% that way, so you try to kind of find a balance in the middle, and that's up to us, right? That's our job.
That's your job is
finding the sweet spot.
I guess finding the spot. I mean, ultimately, the goal is to move the cost towards the cost causers, and that is what everyone is theoretically attempting to do with the class causal service study. And so,
but you don't have universal agreement on cost causers when you have two different methodologies that come up with very different cost causers.
Yes. However, there are some methods that are better than others. And if you probably have looked since the 50s on, there have been a wide varying degrees of of class cost of service studies and cost allocation methods, not all of them equal. That's why there have been changes over the decades to how they have been allocated. So I agree with you to the extent that it's within the realm of probably normal practice, but not to the extremes, I guess.
But the two methodologies here are both acceptable methodologies, right?
Yes.
I mean, what AARP is proposing and what Carl is proposing and what that company is, those are all acceptable methodologies, and they come up with different results.
I think that based upon at least what the advisory staff has read, and I think they're both, there's a rational basis.
Yeah, for all of it. So that's where I struggle a bit with this notion, like, oh, it's so clear, you just go to who's causing the costs, except for you can argue about who's causing the costs, and you can justify different arguments there. Or not.
You know, I guess one point of hesitation on my part is just looking at, digested AARP's proposal yet fully, but they just are equalizing across the customer classes, and that might not exactly dig into what the actual cost causers are. It's more in a spirit of compromise, as it states. Something that
their actual class cost of service study was fairly sparse. I mean, they did take issue with one item specifically, and then, but for the most part, they really didn't address the broader class cost of service study. Carl did dig into it quite a bit more, I mean, with the minimum system costs. But even though he was in opposition to the minimum system design, that has been something that the commission has previously precedentially recognized as a reasonable approach moving forward.
Yeah.
So to the extent that we would like to stick with precedent or previous reasoning, that holds some value.
Can you guys remind me, even though Carl proposed a different approach that would have resulted in lower residential costs, right? For their overall proposal, how did they justify their overall? That's right. We, our advocacy staff didn't go along with what they recommended.
Right. His recommendation was contrary to previous commission precedent. And while it's, again, not seeing a strong position one way or the other, it was inconsistent with what we've done in the past, and our past experts, too. I mean, they're consultants to come here to bring in to help advise us, but not ultimately direct advocacy staff what position to take. But, Rob, if you would like to just walk through those points of distinction, because that is in the record. That testimony is available for you guys to consider.
So, specifically, we want to look at, well, if we just look at what NSP proposed for a breakdown, it is in, I think that's in my memo. So, for residential, they had a 15% increase overall, and then the CNI firm was 10.5, and then a 10 for small, large, and eruptable service, in addition to an increase in the fixed charges. Fixed monthly charges. So essentially, let's see, Pavlovic did not, or here we go, I think I got this, had an actual decrease in the residential service, delivery service charge, that fixed charge on a monthly basis. That's on table two. And they only had 0.3% revenue increase then with the residential. And if you follow that down, then if I'm correct about this, about 10% for commercial, industrial, small, interruptible is almost 6%, and large was 8%. So definitely subsidizing the residential there from, according to the methodology there.
So here, his cost, would it be subsidizing, or he thinks that's how the cost would be?
His argument is that it's over allocated to the residential, and that's
currently
subsidizing the other classes.
I see.
If you do the other methodology, that's going to, that the way that that pans out is saying that residential is being subsidized by the other classes.
Right.
Makes sense. So it's an,
Rob, there are two main distinctions that led to that conclusion, right, essentially with that departure. And that had a lot to do with the ultimate distribution means.
Correct.
Which maybe you just walk through the two takes on that, through the minimum system cost and how that changed the allocation to the distribution means for customer charge relative to demand-related and the subsequent allocation. That might be helpful.
Yeah, and I might get this correct here. As far as the residential, you don't, the argument is that you don't build mains out for the residential, correct? And that the you add a new customer because that doesn't increase the, where they take care of the cost increases, but then they gain revenue from the customer, so it doesn't trigger the building of the mains, right? Is that what you're looking for, Jack, or is that?
Yeah, I guess the explanation is that we understand the minimum system cost where there's a minimal level, and they did a study, I think ends up being a 2-inch main to serve the vast majority of their customers.
That's the NSP method.
Yeah, the NSP is that base method.
Yeah.
And Carl, of course, takes exception to that. He believes that that the minimum system cost is a method that's not accepted, and he cites the NARUC gas rate manual and so forth. I guess if you look at the NARUC gas rate manual and read that through, I don't think that it takes quite as strong as a position as he states. It's mostly walking through the different methodologies.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And the minimum system is in there, too.
The minimum system is in there as well, too.
Yeah.
And maybe you could walk through the demand day differentiation between the two.
I'm a little hazy on that part, I guess.
That's prepared. Confusing.
It is a little bit confusing, so.
Design day demand. So
there's a peak design, right, with the.
And that's NSP used an average and peak design.
Right.
And go ahead.
And what that does is essentially it averages out a lot of that demand out, which, of course, if you're the residential class, you know.
You're not causing the peak at those times necessarily.
Right. Lower demand, more customers. So ultimately, you end up by having averaging it out and not having the total system peak, it allocates more ultimately to the residential class with that method relative to the other.
Mm-hmm. So obviously we could choose, I mean, the results could lead us in lots of different directions. We could have a pure like goal of saying we 100% believe in the cost of service study that NSP has followed and the commission has, I don't want to say endorsed, but used for the last any number of years, and try to move our rates entirely to be in line with that study. We could go the other direction and follow Carl's and try to move our rates entirely in that area. Or we could take the Jerry Lean approach, which would be to recognize that there's probably some rationale for both and find a balance that doesn't go 100% into one direction. I mean, is that a possibility? Or do we have to say, no, we love this plan and this is where we're headed?
I guess I would recommend as advisory staff that if we are going to change our class cost of service allocation methodology, that we don't do a full swing, that we do temper it to a degree to get a better sense of gradualism. I guess speaking with the regard to Mr. Lean, the late Mr. Lean, I would say that regarding the class cost of service study, that he would probably agree with this allocation method.
Which?
But however, I think he tended on the rate design, the straight fixed variable rate, to take the approach of taking more of a middle ground generally.
When you say this rate design, though, which one are you talking about?
The class cost of service study.
The one with NSPs?
Yes.
Versus the... What is not the design versus the design day methodology?
Related to the straight fixed variable, the rate design, whether volumetric or not.
The class cost of service study that NSP is the one that allocates 2% of the distribution mains or the 2-inch distribution main to residential. What's that called again? That methodology?
Minimum system.
Minimum system. So Jerry would support that.
He generally was, my recollection is correct, and Mr. Diller, who were both on board with this.
You would expect them to be because they were here.
Because they were here for the last 20 years, right?
He had Rob's job for 30 years. He passed away last year. Okay.
And one thing that I think may be helpful as well, I think you put that in your memorandum, Rob. You talked about the how NSP's current, methodology and allocation was subsequently tempered. Maybe you could just go over that again.
Yeah. Well, right. NSP did temper their initial percentage increases going, I believe the residential was 33-point-something%. They brought it down to 15, and then the others compensated for that. And I think I had just gone over that. But the settlement, this is the settlement numbers right here, right?
Yes, this is.
Which was just for the class cost of service, which this was just objected to by the intervener, correct? So this is agreed upon between NSP and advocacy. I believe, is that?
Which one is that?
That's this one.
Yeah, this one is. That one was the objection to.
Yep, just that. Okay. But it's tempered even more than to the residential. Is only an 8.75% increase, and then the commercial firm and interruptibles at 6.74% each. That's how you get the average of the total, then is 7.54%. And that's what AARP just went with, that percentage increase across the board there. So if you look at, you know, what the minimum system did, I mean, the allocation to residential, according to the NSP's methodology, should have been at that above, you know, above 33% or whatever it was, and they brought it down to 8.75% increase, I think. If I might be messing those percentages up, but
that's correct.
Okay.
So they initially brought it down to 15%, and then in the settlement brought it down to 8.7%.
I believe so. Yeah.
All right. And then the CNI was 10.5%, and what's their settlement increase?
Sorry, I missed that
for
question.
The commercial and industrial firm service rate.
Yeah. So those are both brought down as well. We're looking at the.
I don't have that table. Is that part of the?
I don't believe that was part of the settlement table.
Where is that? Okay, so what we asked for as a late file, that was AARP. So if we followed AARP's recommendation of the 7.5% across the board, what would it look like? And so we've got that as a late file exhibit. See, what would really be helpful is to have this and what the proposed settlement is in terms of the same figures. Do we have a table that shows a settlement?
There is a table in the settlement with the current revenues and the proposed increase and the percentage increase.
What page is that in the
settlement? That's on page 3 of the settlement.
So my page 3 doesn't have that. I must be looking at a different settlement. Was there 2 settlement agreements?
There were 2 settlement agreements. Yeah. One was the revenue requirement, the other one was on the rate design.
Yeah. Do either of you guys have the rate design one in front of you?
I don't. If it's
Could you just make a copy of the table, Jack? That'd be great.
Have it, I don't have it.
Okay. So, the residential proposed increase would be under the settlement, $2.3 million, and under the AARP's proposal would be $2.02 million of an increase. So 7.54% versus 8.75. Commercial firm, where's the big difference there? So the revenue increase under AARP's would be $2.4 million, and under the settlement is $2.1. So that's a $300,000 difference, roughly. Interruptible, ARPs would be an increase of almost 650, and it would be 580 for the settlement. So how would you characterize those differences just in terms of actual dollars from those rate classes? Substantial, moderate differences.
So the current revenues proposed in the settlement for residential would be at 29,141 after the increase versus the be 28,817 for AARPs. So I don't know exactly if you. I don't know how to classify it, if that's substantial or not, but there is
okay,
a volumetric charge though with residential proposed by AARP as well. Is that
that's the piece that doesn't show up in these tables?
I don't think so.
Or does it? No, it
maybe
has
it does.
It does. Shows up in the tables. It's just how it's collected.
Right. To the extent that we can, I like to keep those two class cost servers in the rate design separate, because once you start bleeding the two concepts over, it gets a
right
for the purpose of discussion gets a little bit confusing.
Yes.
If we can.
So,
are you asking for, I guess, the ultimate customer impacts? Because I guess I don't have that readily available. We can calculate that out probably without the work session.
It doesn't seem like just by the numbers to be hugely different. When you look at like the interruptibles, $650,000 versus $580,000.
Between the two, you're talking about $300,000 for the residential class between the final settlement and the ARP's proposed revenue requirement is a proposal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fairly minor for rate impact.
Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the other classes, too, it's not a huge difference. So.
Well, isn't the percentage increase on the chart a fair indicator of the impact?
Yeah.
You get? Well, it's about a 1% difference.
Well, it depends on the customer class as well, though, and the usage. So with the residential class, I guess 1%, and of course that value spread across $300,000 across the entirety of the residential classes, fairly small.
Yeah.
But for each customer, that's about what it's going to be.
It's 1%
difference between the two.
Yeah. I think that's
should
probably
carry
true.
Down.
It seems to me it's a
1% difference. Yeah.
Okay, so where are you guys at on the class cost of service study and the revenue apportionment? Are you comfortable with the settlement? Do you want to entertain deviating from that? Now, don't get into the rate design. That's next up.
Go ahead. I was thinking. Go think in class cost of service, there was a long time historically where energy costs are very low, service costs are very low. And it was very easy for utility commissioners to just put things, and there wasn't a lot of economic development wasn't an important factor in our economy. Our economic development was farming. And so it was very easy to just shift revenue needs on away from residential, keep everybody happy. And they, you know, it was easy to do. And so now they seem more alarming. And I think that the settlement numbers in this class cost of service are a proper adjustment in light of the amount of revenue that we're needing to collect. So I think the percentages are about where they should be.
Do you think that... would you ever see as a goal getting to the point where NSP is saying their class cost of service study would suggest a 33% increase to the residential because of the way their methodology allocates revenues and cost causation?
Well, ever can be a really, really long time. And I mean, there's a lot of rate shock in the middle of, you know, between.
Right.
There's a whole lot of things that throw these markets off too, and everything, because there are just so many intricacies, government programs and things like that. So I don't know that long term of the future, but I think for now these numbers work out and are just and reasonable.
Okay. Sherry, you don't have any thoughts to share?
Well, I think when utility companies go with a cost of service, I think you've seen a shift in where those cost studies have been focused on, and I think you're starting to see utilities go for a more fixed rate on that. So to the question you asked, Commissioner Christman, I could see companies going towards a more incremental true cost of study and the fixed rate, and I think where you see a hit is in residential. So I think what's been prepared on the class cost of study is, I would concur, is accurate.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think that there was, you know, a huge convincing amount of evidence to change from the minimum system methodology to what Pavlovic suggested. I mean, our own advocacy staff didn't even go along with that recommendation. So I don't think that moving away from that is warranted. I do appreciate the significant mitigation of the proposal to not jump in and try to get the, you know, amount of revenues that the class cost of service study suggests is needed from the residential. And furthermore, I don't know that we should ever go that far. That's where I'm struggling. It's like, if we believe in that methodology, then one would suggest that we go that way at some point. And so then what? I don't believe that. But then are we like out there with our own methodology then, or what are we following?
Well, there's that portion, but there's also the other part with the peak design day, which are two different, I guess, items. So hypothetically, you could do the minimum design day,
yeah,
and change up the subsequent issue between how those design days are actually apportioned out between customer in demand.
Okay, you got to go through that again, Jack.
Oh, boy. This will be a tough one. So I think Rob walked us through those two issues, the main issues between Carl's testimony and the company's testimony. And one was, of course, that minimum system allocation, which then the minimum system moves some of those distribution mains, that allocation,
right,
to the customer cost relative to the demand cost. So that's one issue. And then there's a subsequent concept of how much of that is allocated as well, based upon between the different groups, based upon design day usage.
Yep.
And I don't know if I'm fully prepared to walk you through all of that today, but they both have different allocation methodologies for that as well, based upon one is to use the peak design, and the other one, the company.
Which one do we currently follow?
I believe that we currently follow the one that is proposed by NSP.
Which is what?
Just give me one second here. Just want to run out of the right terminology for it. They break it down into two portions, the average and the peak demand method.
Okay.
And so when you actually break it down, it breaks it down into two subsequent portions. Unless I misunderstood.
No, I don't think so.
I'm going to need to look at this separate from here to get this straight in my head, but barring any major revelation in that process, I think I'm pretty comfortable with the revenue apportionment as proposed in the settlement for now, but I do want to revisit those methodologies just to better understand them and the differences in how they're allocating the costs. Okay, so then moving on to the last item just to touch on, and we can reschedule another of one of these meetings, the rate design. So the two extremes, one is the company proposing everything for the revenue or residential be collected in a fixed rate, and AARP suggesting that everything be collected in the fixed rate, the customer charge be the same, and everything be collected in a distribution service or distribution delivery charge. So those are the two extremes. What does the settlement say on that? It's all fixed rate, right?
Yes, they essentially have the fixed rate, and then the subsequent, the cost of gas runs alongside with the rider. So.
Say that again.
So there's just one fixed cost for residential class.
Yeah.
The other classes are different, but residential.
Yes.
Class,
yeah. But there already is the other classes already have that. The demand piece.
The
volumetric piece.
They do because,
So, all right. How are you guys? Do you guys have any thoughts you want to share yet on the rate design piece of this discussion on the fixed versus straight fixed variable versus adding in a volumetric charge of some sort? Or going 100% volumetric charge, as AARP suggests.
For the residential.
Yeah, just for the residential.
Well, I sure am not in favor of going 100% volumetric.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big advocate always of some of the conservation things. I think we should produce, not generally, as opposed to conserving. However, you should conserve where it's reasonable. And if the company is going to pay for their fixed costs with volumetric charges, you take away all of the incentive for the company to try to use conservation methods.
Say that again.
If they're going to pay for all their fixed costs with a volumetric charge, there's no more incentive for the company to want to conserve resources either.
Or promote the customer
or
to conserve.
Promote the customer to conserve, correct.
Just as a point of clarification, that's not what AARP is proposing, right? Is it just you're taking it out to an extreme to see what that would be like?
Right. So that's one extreme. If you're going to do everything volumetric, then, I don't know, it's not even extreme. That's one way of looking at it, I think. The other way of looking at it would be to do it all on a fixed monthly charge. Well, we already have cost of gas, so that is there is a volumetric charge in their billings that goes up and down with the amount of gas they use. Yeah, it's a lot, that is for sure. But there's a lot of new costs. There's been a lot of growth and such, and the costs for providing the services are going up. I have a hard time siding on AARP's side on this argument. I at this point, I'm leaning with the settlement.
To go 100% in the customer charge.
Right.
You know, I think one thing that may be helpful for your consideration of, I guess, moving towards a volumetric or not, is this illustrative to a degree is we did have that Storm Uri, so there are cost recoveries. There actually is a volumetric charge right now for the recovery of that value on the interim until next year. And so I know we've been fielding questions and concerns for customers over the past year due to the impact of their bills from that, you know, the fluctuations of it. And that, to a degree, that's due to that Storm Uri charge. So they're actually seeing it. It's just not being seen as a separate line item on their bill.
It's not baked into their customer charge. It's all being collected through a volumetric charge.
Right. I know you guys have been having to explain that to the people.
Well, I haven't had to explain that so much, the volumetric, just that they're being charged at all. You know, like that they have to pay these extra costs for a problem that they didn't create. That's what I've been, not the methodology as much for me anyway. I don't know, maybe you've had questions on the volumetric charge in specifically, but they don't like having to pay anything more for these costs that they didn't feel like they contributed to causing. Whether, I don't know that they noticed that it was a volumetric versus a, if it had been in their fixed, you know, which would have been hard to do.
I can't say, other than one or two that maybe listened to us, or a very small number that listened to us or read up on something that ever differentiated that kind of detail.
Just,
here's my bill. It's too much. I read in the paper you guys gave them something to raise it, and it was because of the winter storm, and you should have done that. I want to pay less, not more.
Well, I would be open to a volumetric charge. I just think that, you know, baking everything into the customer charge, all the increases from now into the, you know, indefinite future is not something that I think is going to be sustainable. and it makes it more difficult for customers to understand when other states do it differently, and people can talk about that, you know? And so why are they not more open to it? I mean, we're doing it right, but most states then are doing it wrong. And yet the customers there seem to like it better. Yeah, I mean, the purist of me would say, yeah, it makes sense, but then it's, you know, these energy-related issues aren't black and white anymore. There's a lot of confusion out there that complicates things. So I guess I would be open to a middle ground between what the AARP is suggesting, which is keeping the fixed customer charge where it is and doing all of the revenue increases for this case in a volumetric charge, somewhere in between that and what the settlement suggests, which is collecting it all in a customer charge, which would be $22. So I would probably look at something like $20 for the customer charge, and or $19.50 in the rest volumetric, or something like that. That's where I am right now.
I fear that somewhat disguises from people what the costs of the things we demand are. And, you know, we want to grow these communities, keep building out further, we have big yards, some of the things that the governor's talked about, and which I don't always really agree on some of, you know, trying to keep the core parts of town. You know, I wish you'd live in apartment buildings and condos down there instead of building yards and stuff. But I kind of like seeing build out. However, we have to understand what the costs of that are. And the costs of it are building out infrastructure to cover it. And now when the infrastructure costs start coming in, we say, well, you know, we'll shift it away so your monthly charge doesn't go up so much. So that kind of disguises it and encourages that type of growth without a real assessment of what their costs are to do it. And so,
well, you know, their costs are going to be about the same, because they're paying the same amount. We're getting the same amount of revenue from them. It's just from a volumetric charge that they can, you know, in principle, have more control over.
The average customer's charges will be the same.
Right.
The one who just sets up one more meter site because they want to have a grill there or something and can afford to have an extra lot for that, they're going to get by very well on this. And yeah, then it gets into the argument that I've never been able to get clear answers on. You know, it's easy to assume that old small homes, back when we built 1,000 square foot homes, only use a third as much energy to heat and cool as what a newer 3,000 square foot home does. But I don't believe that, because they have better insulation, better everything, better.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it's not true. And so I think actually the volumetric charge, I'll tell you, I drive by some housing developments that are very small and have lower income people residing there, and think of those buildings, and I think back to some of the places that I've lived over the years, and they use a lot of energy. I didn't have natural gas because I wasn't in a natural gas community, but my electric bills in some of my first homes were a lot more than the ones that I live in now. Oh. And so
there is a counter to that, though. And what about the apartment buildings where there's 300 apartment buildings in a one block area, and they've got 300 basic service charges in that small area? Everyone paying. I mean, there are some counter arguments to some of this stuff that, you know, it makes it less black and white.
But there's still a cost of service.
Which they'd still be paying.
Yeah. I think it gets down to some philosophical, just like the methodology. You know, you have the difference. I'm leaning towards the settlement, agreeing with it, as Mr. Crispin said, but... Julie, you do raise some points. I guess I would like to study that just a little bit more on how that volumetric would work, you know, to give some look at what AARP is proposing. but I'm leaning towards a settlement and agreement on the rate design. But willing to look at it, and I think I would work with Frank or someone to get some examples or dig a little bit deeper into that.
Could we? Go ahead, Jack.
I was just saying we could probably provide a range for you of, how the requested fixed charge with AARP as they provided through what XL Energy has and the advocacy staff has agreed to. Between the two fixed charges and then how that would subsequently change the volumetric value. I guess at the end of the day, it shouldn't necessarily change the actual rates they're paying
right. A
whole lot. But we could provide a range, and that's something the commission
would like. What about, if you took a $20 customer charge, what would the volumetric charge be?
Sure.
Maybe some comparisons. We've got some comparisons over high users, low users, average users. How that changes. Is that something we can ask the company to provide? Or
I think we probably could get an idea.
Yeah.
High, medium, and low for residential. And because I think you're going to find that it's even from where AARP is to the companies, the variance is not going to be, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, the variance on average.
Yeah, will be. Not as right. notable, since 70% of it's already the cost of gas as it is right now. So you're talking about a percentage of the remaining portion.
But what does that do then as we start shifting that way? Because frankly, that's an easy place to shift towards, because you have groups that come in large numbers representing residential compared to the other classes. So as we start moving that direction, I think the likelihood is however far we move, the next time we'll move a little further that direction. And for most people that are trying to keep their overall bill low, the utility company is probably the first resource they have to go to reach out for what can they do to lower their utility bill. Well, if the utility company is meeting their fixed costs at whatever percent of their fixed costs they're meeting on the volumetric charge, how helpful are they going to be in trying to get people to save natural gas? And actually,
what have they done? We've asked this in several rate cases and have yet to hear from the utilities that because they're on this fixed straight variable, they've done any promotion of conservation or really developed anything to do that very thing that they keep talking about. One of the biggest reasons for this is they can promote conservation, but we've really yet to hear any compelling evidence that they're doing that. They love it because they know what income they're getting. It's set, and there's no variables. They get it. They set it and they get it. And so, I mean, yeah, that's a compelling argument, but I think the utilities have fallen flat in providing any evidence that they've actually been like, yes, since you gave us this, we've been going out and really telling customers, like, you should conserve in this way, and we'll help you do this and that, and give you your average, assessment of your house, and, it exists if customers want to go get it, but it's not something that we've heard that they promote.
Well, hopefully it goes back to their mission, reliability and affordability, that they're living, that's just the buzzword out there, and what are they doing to get that? To achieve that. I think they're doing their day-to-day service, to keep the lights on and all that, but the conservation begins with each one of us. And to put it all back on the company, I don't think it's really fair. Every one of us has our due diligence to conserve energy, the education of rolling brownouts and all that. If you're not listening to the news and the energy stuff, it all begins with each one of us.
Agreed. It's just that they argue that one of the reasons for the straight fixed variable is it takes away any disincentive that the company has to promote conservation.
I don't know if I would agree with that.
That's what they argue.
Yeah, sure. I hope the companies are out there doing that on a daily basis, and if we have to ask that more in a hearing, then we will, to really pinpoint that down. So.
And the company really pointed in their testimony during the proceeding that even if we moved towards this amount, you're really going to see a negligible value. The incentive already exists,
right,
since it's 70% of that value already from that actual cost of gas. So if you do a slight movement, I don't know if anyone will note, if I'm just thinking myself, if I'll actually notice or I'll conserve more because of that,
mm-hmm,
if there's a slight additional volumetric.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's one thing to consider. And the alternative from the customer standpoint, the one thing that is notable, at least, the bills will change too. They have been used to seeing how the bills,
yep,
have been operating. And so there would be another light item on the bill from that, but also NSP probably with their, they should be used to it from their gas side, which there should be a strong correlation between those two customers. So just wanted to provide a little point on that.
Is the philosophy also with the straight fixed rate? We're in turmoil times with cost, supply chain, inflation, everything, that the true cost of doing business, so if you have that versus a volumetric, you're less subject to all of a sudden higher costs and doing another rate change and bigger. It's more, the straight fixed would be more incremental versus peaks on rate increases.
Stability.
It does provide stabilization.
Yeah, because they get exactly what they're asking for. Their revenue requirement is secure. There's no variable nature in it from the residential class. Versus volumetric, they have to, it depends some on use. So it would definitely be more direct, the straight fixed variable, despite its weird name.
I know what you're saying, but I don't think it comes off right when you say, well, this would give them exactly what they're asking for. It would be in the way, in the, using the method that they're asking for. But this settlement is a compromise from what they were asking for originally. So.
No, but in terms of what the agreed upon revenue is, they get it. There's a reason why the utilities really love this method. It's very clear. This is what we're, this is what the revenue requirement is for the residential, and this is how we're going to get it. You know, they just divide it up.
Was this why you, it was requested to have the annual returns during the proceeding? I was trying to remember because we were discussing.
That was more on the RLE.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, we can wrap this up on another date.
I want to ask one more question to Watson and Marie. Does switching that and providing a little less assurance, then does that change anything as far as their ability to attract investment at any given rate? Because if it's not as stable, then it would seem to me that their ability to borrow money would also potentially go up. So are those two connected? If we change this, does that alter the first one?
Well, I guess I'm not an expert on getting capital and how they are able to actually attract the capital. I know in the past, though, in the testimony that was provided in the record that, you know, it's actually some of the written testimony, the constructive regulatory environment, and actually some of the S&P and Fitch and Moody's discussion regarding Xcel Energy and NSP, that providing a constructive regulatory environment does actually give tends to provide a higher rating to a company.
At the beginning of the hearing, I asked a lot of questions about that as it relates to the ROE, because I feel like if our customers are getting some of these or paying for, you know, some of these assurances that the company has in North Dakota, we have a very friendly regulatory environment. They have this fixed variable rate, fixed rate variable. They have interim rates. You know, those are two really big assurances that should result in a lower ROE.
Cost of gas rider.
Yeah, cost of gas rider too. Does it? That's the question. I mean, so that's why I was asking those questions.
Yeah.
Like, there's, if we're going to provide this, then we should get the benefit on the other side somehow. In, like, you can't talk about all these advantages of these different types of rate or regulatory tools and then short us on the other side. Like,
right.
So.
I remember you asking the questions, now we're at this stage, and so a settlement is reached that uses this ROE, and in the settlement is this model of collecting the revenues. Now, if we accept the settlement, except for we change the model, then is the basis for the settlement still the same? And so, if we change one, does that mean we should be altering the other? I feel like you're looking at it from the point of, okay, this is the way we're collecting the money, and so maybe the ROE should be lower, but maybe if we change it, then it would be higher. So I don't know. I know they correlate. I'm trying to figure out where the starting point is here.
In my way of thinking, which, you know, may be difficult to follow at times, the ROE is higher than I would like it to be. So I would like this in exchange. If you want to simplify it, this would be the trade-off. Because I do believe that North Dakota customers should be benefiting from more from the very friendly regulatory environment that we have. Now, we do have low service, low cost service, and high reliability, those sorts of things, and those are ultimately, you know, the most important thing. But when I look at our ROEs and, you know, we're not lower than other states on average. I don't feel like we could our customers could be benefiting more by some of these advantages that the utilities have for operating here. I guess that's how I see it. And, I mean, we're talking incremental, $20 and a volumetric charge. Like, that's not much different than $22 and no volumetric charge, $22 basic service. What does the company get collecting in Colorado, $9 basic service charge?
I know it was less. I don't remember the number.
It was really small. So
I think if given my choice, I would leave this and lower the ROE.
This one was the contested piece. So I believe, Jack, in our conversations, this one was the easier one to change because it was contested.
We do have a record to change
this
if that's the commission's interest.
So anyway, we don't have to... It's early. We've only had a couple weeks since the hearing. We've got closing or draft orders coming, so we can let this all brew for a couple more weeks. Set up another work session,
and we requested some information.
Sure.
And so
maybe I can reiterate that first.
Sure, that'd be great.
You guys asked for maybe a range of volumetric first fixed charges and. Also, how they may change relative to low, medium, and high users with the rate design. And the one other item, too, is, and I apologize, I thought this could be a little more preliminary. I wasn't really prepared to get deep in the class cost of service study as far as we were planning on going. And those two issues are really more the contested issues. Maybe we can provide a subsequent follow-up memorandum on that that really delves into, I guess, a deeper explanation on those two pieces.
Sure.
So I know you were looking to dig into that a little bit.
Yeah.
As well, mm-hmm. And better explanation. I think that would be helpful as well if you'd like that.
Good.
Specifically the design day demand versus the average peak demand.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And maybe we could also discuss and provide another little flesh out that minimum system cost because there is some of it is it also is
yeah.
tied to a degree. So
I do appreciate the memo you did lay out though, Rob. That was really helpful to consolidate all the key things into one spot. That was great.
Sure.
So thank you for that.
Still room for improvement.
No, I think I said that we asked that in the hearing, and there wasn't a lot. But if there is a place in the record you want to direct us, Dave, that would be great. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, anything else?
Is there any direction that you would like advisory staff to go towards drafting anything for the time being? Or should we just hold off to the next work session?
I think
it would be. From that.
I think we need another work session before we start drafting.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. So this work session on case number PU-21-381 is completed. Thank you.